and welcome to Small Biz Matters here in the studios of Triple H 100.1 FM. My name is Alexi Boyd and you're listening to People, Policy, Purpose. Now, there's a sector of the small business community who has always been on the business front line and constantly impacted by macro and microeconomics. They are the embodiment of small business people. First in line to feel it when the consumers tighten their belts, often holding together a regional community, quick to feel the pain of supply chain issues, and wondering how they're going to pay their energy, rent, and wages bill, while still listening to customers' woes and wondering how they're going to keep their doors open. They wear all the hats and suffer all the consequences of poor government decisions. Yet without them, we would grind to a halt, which is exactly what happened during COVID, when we all realised how much we needed their listening ears, their business to flourish so young people in our community could get a head start, and of course their magic touch to make us feel good and smile as you enter their salon. I am, of course, talking about hairdressers. And there is no one, and I mean no one out there, who is more dedicated, passionate, fearless, and fabulous than today's guest, Sandy Chong. So strap yourself in, hit that record button. She's about to share with us a rollercoaster of a career as an advocate, a business leader, an industry leader, and a formidable woman in Canberra.
Welcome to Small Biz Matters, a show where we are dedicated to empowering small businesses and advisors to engage with policy and advocacy. Why? Because what government does very much matters to all small biz, good and bad. Sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office, each week we sit down with experts, advocates, business leaders, policymakers and politicians to dive into specific areas of government policy that affects your clients and your business. We'll give you the heads up on what's coming down the policy pipeline, find out who's fighting in your corner, and empower you with ways you can influence those decisions which affect your business every single day. We proudly broadcast live on our local community radio station, Triple H 100.1 FM, the Community Broadcasting Network, and later wherever you get your favourite podcasts. Let's hear from this week's expert on Small Biz Matters. People, policy, purpose.
And welcome back to the studios of Triple H 100.1 FM. Thank you so much for listening. And we're live in the studio today. We have a wonderful guest, someone who I have been longing to have on the show for so long. She is formidable, she is influential, and she is fabulous. Welcome to the program, Sandy Chong.
Thank you, Alexi. Thank you for having me.
It is really fantastic to have you in this studio, and I'm looking forward to a great discussion all about what your life has been like and what your legacy has been for the industry, but not just for the Australian Hairdressing Council, for which you've been a CEO for many years, but also for small business as a whole. So your legacy is not just about making things easier, better, more efficient, more fabulous for hairdressers, but you've actually done this for small businesses all over Australia. So let's wind it back. Tell me about your business, and you're a small business owner as well. Tell me about your business journey and why it is that you became so passionate about being an advocate.
So I am a hairdresser, and yes, I did own a business for 38, 39 years. I became a hairdresser quite simply because, when I was at school, I'm part Chinese. And being at my age, if we take all those years ago, I was really bullied at school for it was a lot of racist comments, etc. And I had an aunt and also a cousin who were hairdressers, and I thought they were the coolest people on the planet. And they suggested that I do hairdressing, and I think the first salon that I walked in, I think the thing that I couldn't get over was the vibe and the tribe, the culture, the music, the fashion, but more than anything, how inclusive the hairdressing industry is. So it doesn't matter where you come from or the type of person you are, etc. I think what I love about our industry is how inclusive they are. Now, my mum wanted me to be an academic. I am so far from being an academic, which is why it's really interesting when I deal with bureaucrats and politicians, because I'm very, very, so much not like them. But I did go into a salon and I just loved everything about it. But more than anything, just the culture of small business and the culture of being in a business where it was fun, but how we made people feel. That's why no hairdresser joins the industry to make money, okay? That's sort of a bit of an afterthought, especially when you own a business. But when we start to be a hairdresser, it's just the fact that we make people feel good about themselves, And I think the pandemic actually really did prove that point too.
Yeah, it absolutely did. I mean, I think everybody didn't realize what those members of our community were giving to us, not just about feeling good or walking a little bit taller when you leave the salon, but it's that listening ear and it's that member of the community. And like I said in the intro, you know, we expect and we look forward to and we appreciate hairdressers for the jobs that they create. It's one of those industries that has a strong apprenticeship program that has gone for decades. And you're a part of that. That's been one of those real strengths of the Australian Hairdressing Council. Tell us a little bit about why that's so important to the industry and how you influence government decisions to make apprenticeships work.
Well, apprenticeships are the sustainability of any trade. And when we look at apprentices, there is so much choice out there at the moment. And we do have issues with apprenticeships that, or apprentices that join the industry, but they do leave in their first year and they may not complete. In fact, many trades have those issues. We did find that, you know, if we go back prior to the Labor government and we look at the Scott Morrison boosting apprenticeship scheme, it really did help with numbers. Because I think when we look at small business, you know, apprentices aren't paid a lot of money, but they're also learning a skill and they have, you know, hopefully a guaranteed job. And so there's that, you know, there's that battle of, but I'm not earning a lot of money. But, you know, the more you learn, the more you earn. And that's just a fact of life. Okay. And so when it comes to small business, an apprentice is actually one of the most expensive employees to have in your business. But we also want them for the future of our business. You know, many people poach staff, and what they don't think about is the time and the money and the energy that a business person will actually invest in an individual. So an apprentice should be seen as an investment and the future and sustainability of your business and also the industry. And I think one thing I've always been mindful of is letting our members know that poaching staff, especially when someone has invested all that time, money and energy, is not a solution to a skill shortage. Now, hairdressing has been on the skill shortage list for over 20 years, and that's from the Department of Education, Employment and also Home Affairs.
So when we think about those important injections of people coming into the country, migrants, etc., we need to make sure that hairdressing stays on that skilled migration list. Why is that? Why is that so critical, not only for the industry, but for small business as a whole?
Yeah, well, hairdressing was threatened to come off the skills migration list in 2020. And if the pandemic saved anything, it actually saved our industry because we were coming off it. And, you know, I relentlessly lobbied against that. And that is probably one of the most frustrating parts of my role, is lobbying for something when you have a change of ministers constantly. Now, the thing is, we need migrants in our industry. We need to be able to sponsor those that come into the country who are skilled.
Why? What do they bring that's different to the industry?
Well, first of all, they bring a diversity of skills. Okay, so even if I use, for instance, what we call coily hair. Now, coily, C-O-I-L-Y, is actually Afro hair. Now, unless you're from overseas, you don't have those skills. So we want, you know, Australia is now very multicultural. We can all agree with that. And therefore, we need to have multicultural skills come into the country. Take barbering, for instance. Middle Eastern or Italian or even from the UK barbers are brilliant. They have skills that we don't have here.
Wow.
And so, yes, by having them come into the country is definitely, you know, skills that we want. Now, we lose our hairdressers because 78% are female. So because they have babies and they have families and they may come back 1 or 2 days a week, we become an underproductive industry. So by having more come into the country as well helps fill our skills shortage, but also helps our skills as well.
Now, you've been doing this for many years. What does that influence look like? Take me through a typical day in Parliament House where you're walking the hallowed halls and you're trying to change the minds of bureaucrats and ministers around that. How does that work?
So if I look at migration, for instance, we would have a round table in Canberra and our members would fly in from all the different states and they'd meet with the Department of Education and also Home Affairs as well as Employment. And we'd put our case forward. We put in over 38 case studies from businesses that were struggling with staff, spending thousands on recruitment ads and going nowhere. And the requirement to spend more money on recruitment to be able to sponsor someone. Now, when it came to going to Parliament House, and it's quite daunting when you've not done it before. I think I bought a new suit, never wore it again, and bought new shoes. They hurt me, never wore them again either, and tried to look the part, whereas I now realise, look, seriously, they just want to meet you. But the really interesting thing, what's really hard is the ministers change their portfolio. So you have to start all over again. And so, you know, the very first minister that we meet, you really have to prove who you are, that you do know your industry. And you have to show very quickly that you know what you're talking about, okay? And that you understand the environment and the landscape, everything about your industry, because they don't. And it's the one thing that I learned very quickly is they don't understand small business. They don't understand the challenges. They compare you to bigger businesses. And if I use poaching, for instance, as an example, they thought poaching was a good idea. Now, that might be good in the big businesses and the big guys, but definitely not in small business.
Do they think it's a good idea because they think it raises wages because you're poaching and you're trying to increase the wages of an industry, whereas in reality it's just sucking the skills out of one business and putting in another?
Totally. And also too, if we were to calculate for a small business the amount of time, money and energy that is spent investing in your people and someone poaches you, that really hurts a business, like majorly hurts a business. But when we were lobbying with, when we were looking at migration, I saw three different ministers of migration over 2020 and 2021. I also spoke to anyone else who would have me, I must admit too, whether they were the shadow ministers, whether they were commissioners, state and federal, I would speak to anyone about, please, write a letter of support to keep hairdressing on the skills migration list. Now, we are on there, but we're not on the priority list. And, you know, at the moment with the pandemic, they've put other trades on that priority list. But some of the things in the migration review that, you know, Minister Claire O'Neill has put forward, some of them are great for some trades. They are not great for our industry because of the TISMET. Too high for small business and they don't understand that. They're supporting bigger business. But there are other things that, you know, like having mobile fees, for instance, for visas, that certainly does support small business.
So I can hear that you really understand the industry so intimately. Now, that's because you yourself have run a business. How on earth have you managed to run a business and be such a strong advocate and such a loud voice? Because you do a lot of media as well. You're on the drum all the time and you're constantly speaking about this passion that you have. But at the same time, you're running a successful salon. Did you make an eighth day of the week? I mean,
I have 9 days in my week, but and it does include the weekends and late at night. But really, the reality is I am the reality of a business person. So I walk in their shoes. I understand what it's like to have a business and not have one client walk in the door on a day. I know what it's like to pay my staff first and me not get paid. I know what it's like to pay my staff more than what I get paid, to have them take holidays and I don't get holidays. When I opened up my salon, which was called Suki, it was 5 years before I had a holiday. And when I had my daughter, I had 5 weeks off. And I think about that now and I think, wow, you know, I mean, anyone who has a child nowadays, they're supported by the government. They get a year off and you know, they get paid. And so, you know, when I think back to the amount of time that I invested in my business as well, you know, even I'm surprised. At one point, I had 45 staff. I had two businesses, one in Paddington in Sydney and one in Newcastle. And I would travel at midnight back and forth, working 6 days and four nights a week. And that's how small business people work. We don't do 38 hours. We don't have part-time hours. We work really hard. You know, we work really hard if we want our business to work. So I think when I represent small business, I understand the challenges, how they're a roller coaster, how when we look at our cash flow, how scary that is. When we look at industrial relations now, you can't get rid of toxic staff. I've been bullied by staff. I've had everything that you can think of in small business. And so I actually did sell my salon late last year.
Congratulations. It's a big deal when you sell a small business.
And I have a wonderful, wonderful company that bought my salon, Tony and Guy. And, you know, they're certainly one that I really wanted because I knew they would look after the education of my staff. And that was a huge, I think, factor to our success is always invest in education.
And investing in your business and investing in your staff. And I think that's something that comes through with a lot of small business owners is they think, what can I do to support my staff beyond myself being in business? You care more about them. You pay them first. You know, you make sure that they're trained up. So you were running the business and then at the same time, also by the sounds of it, going to Canberra quite frequently. Plus you were also on the Cosboa board. You were a director of the board there, influencing policy across multiple areas. But was that relatively easy because you already knew those policy areas because of being hairdressing council and hairdressers, like I said at the beginning, they experience all those policy shifts?
Yeah, yes and no. Bear in mind, I'm a hairdresser and I owned a business and they were my skill sets and they're my qualifications. Literally, I'm not an academic. And I think probably one lesson that I learned was when I attended a meeting in Canberra and it was with the ATO and we were split up into little groups and we had to come up with a list of things on a flip chart and they gave us a set of pens, okay, texters. And so I wrote on my flip chart and being a creative, I used every colour and I wrote upside down and on the side and in circles and whatever. And we had to put up our flip charts. And when I saw everyone else's, they'd use their navy pen and they just used a straight line. And someone said to me, you used all the colours. And it's like, well, yeah, because you gave me the whole pack. So I used the orange and the purple and
resourceful.
The red. Oh, yes, of course. Well, I didn't want to waste anything. But it made me realise that academics think differently to small business people, especially if you're in the arts or if you're in creatives. And sometimes those creative industries like hairdressing and personal services for that matter get dismissed, passed over, or not really thought about when it comes to, I think, lobbying with the government. And so I think one of the hardest things for me is standing my ground and making it very clear what our needs are, but also what small business needs are. And as I said, I think because I walk the talk, I know what it feels like to walk in their shoes. That's why I can give a realistic, you know, common sense view of what we need.
That's certainly a powerful position to be in, to have all of that real life experience, but also know your cohort and know your members so intimately that you can draw on those experiences too. We're going to take a quick break here on Small Biz Matters. And when we return, we will speak some more with Sandy Chong. And I'm keen to unpack the delightful experience that was COVID and how what impact that had on the industry, but also more importantly, the impact that that had on advocates. We'll be back after this.
This episode of Small Biz Matters is proudly sponsored by the Australian Small Business and Family Enterprise Ombudsman's Office. ASBIFIO assists, advocates and provides information to Australia's 2.5 million small and family businesses when and where they need it. ASBIFIO delivers practical and actionable advice and research to governments on how to improve policies and legislation. Since its inception, ASBIFIO has responded to over 40,000 requests for assistance from Australian small and family businesses and provides access to dispute resolution services, including assistance with disputes that fall under the franchising, dairy, horticulture and oil codes. ASBIFIO also connects small and family business with mental health support should the need arise. As an independent advocate for small business owners, ASBIFIO is committed to ensuring that Australia is the best place to start, grow or transform a business now and well into the future. See how ASBIFIO can support you at asbfeo.gov.au.
Welcome back to Triple H 100.1 FM. You're live in the studios here in Hornsby and we are speaking to the fantastic and influential and fabulous Sandy Chong, who I've been looking forward to having on the program for ages now because she is so impactful and walking the hallowed halls really makes a difference for her industry. But there was a tricky time, I think, for everyone, and that was COVID. And just it must have been so hard to watch the industry on their knees and people so stressed because you also manage a lot of those community groups. So you must have been hearing just the stress and the concern and the worry constantly from your members. How did you, as the leading advocate, sort of turn that into a powerful voice and keep going?
I think, you know, when we look at COVID, you either stood up as a leader or you went to bed, literally. And I guess we were, the Australian Hairdressing Council just really became a very active and, yeah, I think we were just very active in being a voice. And we took it on to make sure that we were giving the right information to members. If you remember, especially with social media, there was so much rubbish out there. And by rubbish, it was just, you know, all the wrong information. What we did is we made sure that we communicated with each of the state governments, obviously federal as well, to make sure that we put the public health orders up. We were timely with everything. We communicated with our lawyers and HR, and communicated with the different commissioners. They were also incredibly helpful.
That's the small business commissioners.
Yeah, so it would be the small business commissioner and also the minister, especially in Victoria. So Victoria, you know, we did reach the point where they were weekly meetings, of course. Although one weekly meeting I found really interesting. We were on there with those that were from the adult industry. Adult industry, what is that called? And the churches. So that was really interesting.
You know, both standing their ground for their members.
Yes, yes. You know, absolutely. So yeah, they were always interesting. So can we open 1 minute two or half an hour before? And I used to wonder why. But anyway, look, it was a hard time because it brought the best and the worst out in people as well. Victoria was brutal, you know, the shutdowns. New South Wales followed. And then, you know, Western Australia wasn't, you know, they weren't as affected. But when they did get COVID, it's like, oh, my God, we've got COVID. But we were ready to help, I guess, everybody. For industry leaders, though, my God, I just think it was such a hard time because all of us copped everything from being given the wrong information or support from our members and even from our communities. I'd have, you know, parents calling because their daughter or son was an apprentice. I'd have consumers calling, abusing me that salons was closed when they wanted their hair done. I'd have consumers calling saying salons should be closed. And I was told I was a murderer because salons weren't closed. I had death threats, everything. So as I said, it brought out the best and the worst. There were some incredible communities. On the other hand, there were some very angry people. And when they targeted to the associations, we were just, you know, it's like, don't shoot the messenger. This is who we are. We're trying to support everybody and put the right information out. If you remember, there was a lot of very confusing information. And you know, if you're on the border or if you were in the greater Sydney but you were like one street away or if you worked here but lived there, there was so much confusion.
Oh my goodness, yeah, I'd forgotten about all of those different aspects to it. It was ingrained in how we had to operate and there was that constant stream of information that you're trying to get out there and then block all the things that are misinformation at the same time without being attacked. But clearly what happened was industry leaders were...
Totally. And in the very beginning, you know, we were told we could open and then we could open for 30 minutes. If you remember, I'll do someone's hair for 30 minutes. Like if you ever had your hair done for 30 minutes, maybe in the barbers, but definitely not in the hairdressing salon. And so everyone was trying to think about strategies of how they could cheat that 30 minutes. You know, but it was very stressful because back then, so we're talking 2020 and the pandemic has just been announced. Well, there were no masks. You couldn't buy anything in the supermarket, if you remember the whole toilet paper thing, but try and get any kind of disinfectant, bleach or anything. There was nothing to protect hairdressers at the very beginning of COVID-19, the pandemic. And so we weren't protected. And so we did say that we should be closed. And, you know, we did cop a lot of abuse for that. But, you know, when we did interview some of our friends in New York and in London and Los Angeles. And when we would interview them about the impact, because they were in front of us, then we could really see that we needed to keep our industry as well as our communities safe. Mm. You know, this wasn't about, you know, small business at the time. We needed to protect our small business and our people. Yes, definitely. And JobKeeper saved us. But we needed to protect our communities. We are hands-on. We don't have social distancing. We breathe in front of your face. So there were real concerns about hairdressers being open during COVID.
It's so bold to actually say we need to close, to see the writing on the wall. And that goes to show how so many strong advocacy organisations like the Hairdressing Council have those international relationships, and therefore you can call on them to ask how things are going, you know, when they're 6 months or even a few weeks ahead, which is really valuable. Those relationships are so important. I think what I saw as one of your amazing strengths as well is you became a leader not just for hairdressers but for hair and beauty, and you really took other associations under your wing with all of your decades of experience, not only as an advocate but as a business owner, and you brought them into the fold, and you saw that there were, you know, bigger organisations that could support them, but you in turn supported them, which is quite formidable, quite amazing that you gave your expertise to other industries and then sort of helped them, nurture them through the process.
Well, I think that during the pandemic, so many of the association leaders really did suffer personally, and and their health really suffered. I don't know of any of my association friends that did not get something. And even for myself, I got Bell's palsy and I couldn't believe it. And you remember that, Alexi, it was heartbreaking. But that's when I finally realised how much stress was put on, you know, those who stood up and they were a voice for business or for small business or for their industry. You know, all of my friends got something. You know, their health was definitely affected. I think that for all of us, though, we were very mentally strong. And I think that's one thing that really stood apart from those who were brave enough to cop the abuse and get the right information and, you know, sort of make a stand and represent people. But, you know, it was quite grueling. I think probably we had a lot of supporters, obviously, but we also had our haters, and that would have been for every industry, every government person, whatever. Emotions were very high, as you know, and it's probably a time that a lot of people wouldn't be proud of either because of the way they behaved. But I think the ones that really stood up, we just had to be mentally really strong. And, you know, I did reach the point where I'd hang up on people for the first time ever. You know, if someone was going to just launch into me, I just hung up on them, because I also had to take care of my mental health and make sure that I was strong enough. But I also, when you talk about the other communities or associations, you need to make sure that it's not just your opinion and it's just not your policy, but that we would communicate to make sure we were all on the right page, to make sure we were doing the right thing. So I think a good idea is lots of ideas. And I think a good idea is always make sure you've got the right people around you so that you can collectively think about what is best for all of us and all of our communities, our families and our friends, what is the right thing that we must do.
It's a fantastic way of thinking about it, because at the end of the day, just like a small business is part of a community, you yourself as an advocate are part of the larger small business community of advocates. So thank you for the services you provide. Fast forward 4 years. So what's tricky about small business now? What is it that we need to see change to help it flourish in the last 30 seconds we've got in the interview?
Oh, I think definitely industry relations. I think every small business owner does not understand the award, which is very, very complicated. Okay, very complicated. And so if there was one thing that I think really needs addressing, it's industrial relations and making it easier to employ people, but also easier to let go of people who are not right for the culture of your business and that are damaging your business. Now, there are procedures to go through, but they're complicated. And when you're a small business person, you don't understand that. You don't have the time. But more than anything, it's really stressful. So if there was something that, you know, I think that really needs to be addressed, I think it is having a better understanding of how small businesses don't understand their obligations that are over the top now, over the top when it comes to employing people. Now, employees do have rights. I understand that. But I think that when it comes to running a small business, our biggest challenge, our biggest stress, our biggest concern is making sure we do everything right for the employee, and it's very easy to get that wrong.
And it's such an impediment for growth in the economy. If you stop people from employing, you stop people from businesses from growing.
Yeah.
And that's hugely detrimental to the economy as a whole. Sandy, where can people find out more about the Australian Hairdressing Council?
Oh, if you go to www.thehahc.org.au, and we would love everyone in the hairdressing industry to obviously join us so we can represent you for the betterment of the industry.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on Small Biz Matters People Policy Purpose. If you've missed any of today's show, you can catch up via our podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, there's over 225 podcasts in our library to listen to for small businesses and their advocates. Thanks for listening to Triple H 100.1 FM. We'll be back next week.